1. Shortly before the Thanksgiving holiday of 2016, retired Marine General James Mattis saw a call from an unknown Indiana number flash on his cell phone screen. Not knowing anyone from there, he ignored it. He was volunteering at the local Tri-Cities Food Bank in Richland, Washington, his childhood home on the Columbia River, where his mother and brother still lived. When a second call came from Indiana, he answered. "This is Mike Pence." Mattis didn't know a Mike Pence, but quickly realized he was speaking with the vice president-elect. "The president-elect would like to talk to you about the Secretary of Defense job," Pence said. "I am happy to give him my advice," Mattis said, "but I am not eligible. To preserve strict civilian control, the law prohibits anyone who has been a military officer in the last 7 years from serving as defense secretary. The only exception had been World War II General George Marshall, who had received a waiver in 1950 and been a national hero." Given the raging partisan divisions in Washington, Mattis privately believed Democrats in Congress would never support such a waiver. But Mattis did want to talk to Trump and agreed to fly east. He wanted to persuade Trump to question his positions on NATO and torture. Trump had called the military alliance obsolete and promised to bring back the enhanced interrogation techniques on suspected terrorists that President Barack Obama had banned. Mattis thought Trump was wrong on both counts. One thing was clear in Mattis's mind. He did not want the job. Mattis had boundless love for the Marine Corps, but not Washington, D.C. Mattis had been commander of U.S. Central Command, known as CENTCOM, from 2010 to 2013, overseeing the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was fired by Obama due to his aggressiveness toward Iran when Obama was negotiating a nuclear deal with Iran. Shortly after arriving at Trump's golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey on Saturday, November 19th, Mattis was escorted to an informal gathering around a table with Trump, Pence, Chief Strategist Steve Bannon, Ivanka Trump, and Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Mattis had a stoic Marine exterior and attention-getting ramrod posture, but his bright, open, and inviting smile softened his presence. Right up front, Trump questioned the value of NATO, which had been formed by 10 European countries, the United States, and Canada at the end of World War II as a safeguard against Soviet aggression. In 2016, there were 28 member nations. "The other countries of NATO, these European allies, are taking us to the cleaners," Trump said. "The United States didn't need NATO. We pay and they get protected. They take us for all we're worth and they're not giving enough in exchange." "No," Mattis insisted. "If we didn't have NATO, we would have to invent it and build it because we need it so badly. You know how you build your big tall buildings? You'd build NATO." "Huh?" said Trump. The NATO countries, which pledged that an attack against one is an attack against all, went to war after your hometown of New York City was attacked, Mattis reminded him. NATO troops were sent to Afghanistan after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States. Several of those countries have lost more boys per capita in Afghanistan than we have. They've been bleeding. "Yes, they have to do more," Mattis said. "You're absolutely right, they need to spend more of their GDP on defense. You're absolutely right to press them. I'll even tell you how I'd take the message to them. We need to let them know that we are not going to keep telling American parents they have to care more about protecting European kids than Europeans care." But, Mattis continued, "NATO held the line against Soviet aggression during the Cold War until the internal rot of the Soviet Union collapsed upon itself. NATO prevented real war on the European continent. We need NATO." To Mattis's surprise, Trump did not argue. He seemed to be listening. The president-elect next voiced approval of torture as the quickest way to obtain information from captured terrorists. Mattis didn't want to spend time explaining the origins of his personal philosophy. He subscribed to the beliefs of General John Lejeune, the legendary World War I general often described as the greatest Marine of all time. Lejeune believed the Corps not only had to make efficient fighters, but return better citizens to society. Inflicting torture caused spiritual damage and produced horrible people, Mattis believed. It undermined the country's moral authority. Instead, he only said to Trump, "We have to recognize that torture damages us. With a cup of coffee and a cigarette, you can get just as much out of them." Trump was listening attentively, and Mattis was again somewhat surprised. Next up was the intelligence community, another subject of Trump's criticism during the campaign. "We have the best spies in the world," Mattis said. "I'm probably the first general in history. For 3 years at CENTCOM, I was never surprised on a strategic or operational matter. Not once." Ivanka Trump, the president-elect's daughter, asked how long it would take to review and rewrite the strategy to defeat ISIS, the violent Islamic State of Iraq and Syria terrorist group which had sprung from the remnants of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and spread into Syria as it tried to create a caliphate in the Arab world. Trump had promised in the campaign to knock the hell out of ISIS. Mattis, surprised the question had come from Ivanka, said it would take months to review. The strategy needed to radically change from a slow war of attrition to one of annihilation. Time was a key issue. Slow wars were losing ones for the United States. Mattis could see Trump was proud Ivanka had weighed in. "Is your name Mad Dog?" Trump asked. "Your nickname?" "No, sir." "What is it?" "Chaos." "I don't like that name," said Trump. "Well, that's my name." "I thought it was Mad Dog." "No, that came from someone else." Mattis blamed the media. "Do you mind if I change your name to Mad Dog?" "You can sort of do whatever you want." "Mad Dog Mattis," Trump said. "That works out great." "Can you do the job?" Government service in any form, Mattis believed, was both an honor and an obligation. He hadn't wanted the job, but when the commander-in-chief called, you accepted without hesitation. No Hamlet wringing his hands at the wall, debating with himself to be or not to be. He said he could, but Trump did not want to announce it publicly yet. Getting a waiver should be easy, he said. After the 40-minute interview, Trump said they were going to appear before the press. Did Mattis want to say anything? "No, thank you." Steve Bannon had arranged for the photo of Trump and Mattis to resemble 10 Downing Street, the British Prime Minister, before a large door. The media would be across the street, and Trump would be the leader. "All I can say is he is the real deal," Trump said to the press. Mattis stood coolly silent. Trump later tweeted, "General James Mad Dog Mattis, who is being considered for Secretary of Defense, was very impressive yesterday." Mattis had a general operating philosophy which he articulated many times over the years. "You don't always control your circumstances, but you can control your response." He called his mother Lucille, who was 94 years old. She had served in Army intelligence in World War II. He knew she hated Trump. "How can you work for that man?" she asked. "Ma, last time I checked, I work for the Constitution. I'll go back and read it again." "All right," she said. "All right."